Okay, so last time we developed the idea that it could be that the Avos kept all of the Mitzvos Aseh, both Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept all of Mitzvos Aseh, but Mitzvos Los Aseh were only kept by Avraham Avinu. And we explain that the idea of opting into a Mitzvos Los Aseh doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You can't actually achieve anything in that way. Mitzvos Aseh are inherent values. Hashem has made them, has declared them as being purposeful or meaningful. So even if it wasn't commanded of you per se, Hashem has revealed that it's something that he wants in the world. Mitzvahs lo sa'aseh, without the tzivoy, without the command, it doesn't carry much weight. So we ended off by saying, so if so, so why was Yaakov Avinu hesitant in the Gemara and Psachim to lead the benching at the meal of Mashiach in the future by marrying two sisters? So apparently that wasn't a iser to him. There was nothing wrong with that. And we explain that even though technically there was nothing wrong with it, the fact that Hashem would eventually decree and reveal through the Torah that marrying two sisters is prohibited, so the fact that Hashem allowed Yaakov to do something which would in the future be prohibited, Yaakov saw as a small shortcoming on his part, and because of that, he didn't want to lead the benching. Okay, so tonight as we finish up Perek Chaf, we'll see another approach to how to understand the mitzvah observance of Yaakov and Yitzchak. Okay, so let's see. So we come back to a Gemara in Maseches Chulin, where the Gemara told us that Yosef, when he was preparing meat for his guests, he wanted them to know that it was properly shechted and that there was no gid hanasha. The Gemara in Chulin, on the pasuk again at the in Vayigash, in or in Miketz, the Tavoach Tavach Vahachain. Tavach, tavach, you should shech the animal, v'hachein, you should prepare it. So it says the Gemara, tavach, tavach, you should slaughter it, para lahem beis hashchita, reveal to them that the meat has been shechted. V'chein, shiyitol gid hanasha, right? Prepare the meat, v'hachein, the pasuk says, prepare the meat, show them that the gid hanasha has been removed. Show that to them, reveal that to them. Shiyitol gid hanasha b'fnehem, take out the gid hanasha in their presence. Command the Amar nitztava Yaakov al Giranasha. And the Gemara says in Chulin, this follows the opinion that they were already keeping the halachos of Giranasha. Okay, so we raised the question prior that Tosfos on the spot asked the question, Shema afal gav delo nitztavu, Shema ma'atzum hayu mekaimim, kamo shchita. Again, the pasuk says two things. It says, Tavach tavach v'hachein. So the Gemara explains, the meat was shechted, and there was no Gid HaNasha. So from here we learn that what? It must be they were commanded in Gid HaNasha. Says Tosfos, but they weren't commanded in Shechita, and they kept Shechita nonetheless. So maybe they opted to keep Gid HaNasha. So says Tosfos, says the Maharal, that's not a question. According to our approach, that's not a question. Ki lefi zeh in kasha. Based on our approach, what's the difference between Shechita and Gid HaNasha? Shechita is a mitzvah saseh. Not eating Gid HaNasha is look vehefrish gadol yeshpo. There's a strong distinction between shchita and Gid HaNasha. Ki Gid HaNasha mitzvahs lo sa'aseihu. Gid HaNasha is a lo sa'aseh. And as we've explained, im lo hayu mechuyavim, lo hayu mekayimim. When it comes to a lo sa'aseh, a person who's not obligated to keep a lo sa'aseh gains nothing by choosing to keep a lo sa'aseh. Shchita, on the other hand, which is a positive command, but a positive command, as we've explained, has inherent value, and therefore we can suggest that they kept it even before it was officially and formally commanded. And again, our approach fits seamlessly with Tosfos' question. Again, if they opted into Shechita, why are you assuming that they were commanded in Gid HaNasha? And the answer is, because Shechita has a value on its own without being commanded. It's a positive commandment. But Gid HaNasha, they would never have kept if not for being commanded. So the Gemara says, so from here we see that Yaakov Avinu already and his children, his descendants, were keeping the mitzvah of Gid HaNasha. Okay. Beautiful. V'od yeturetz b'zeh kushya gedola. And based on this, we can answer a further question. A question that is raised in Perek Kol Shah, in the Gemara in Psachim, Eitzel Bigdei Kalayim, in the Gemara's discussion about garments that contain shatnas. Shemutu la'asos mihen tachrich lemes. Are you allowed to make tachrich and burial shrouds for a mace out of something which is klai? And the answer is yes. The Gemara says you can. V'hikru sham b'tosfos. I don't understand, says Tosfos. D'zeh havi loig l'rosh. We know the Pasuk of Mishlei warns us that a person should not mock an impoverished person. And the Gemara's application of mocking, making fun, ridiculing an impoverished person is what? Is doing something in the presence of a dead person that would make the dead person, so to speak, jealous. So, for example, the Gemara tells us that it's usur to enter into a beis hakvaros, to go into a cemetery, while a person is wearing their tzitzis out. Because tzitzis, of course, remind us of all the mitzvos, and a person who's no longer alive can't do mitzvos. So therefore, the Gemara in Bracha says it's inappropriate for a person to wear their tzitzis out in the beis hakvaros. That would be a violation of loeg l'rash. So says Tosfos, shouldn't the same thing be true about kelayim? V'hocha nami have loeg l'rash levishas kelayim? Wouldn't dressing a dead person in burial shrouds made of klayim, wouldn't that also be mocking the dead, so to speak? You're not allowed to wear your tzitzis out, because that makes, so to speak, the person who's no longer alive jealous that they don't have the opportunity to do the mitzvah. And yet here you're saying that you're allowed to make burial shrouds out of klayim, something which is prohibited. But again, according to our approach, this distinction between mitzvahs asay and mitzvahs lo asay, we have no problem solving this at all. Kevan shemeis potter min mitzvos. When a person is no longer alive, they're exempt from mitzvos. Im lo yikayim mitzvos lo saasei, ein kan hal agal meis. So since the person is therefore freed from the performance of mitzvos, so therefore not fulfilling a lo saasei, right? Once they no longer have an obligation, a dead person doesn't keep mitzvos. So a dead person who is not keeping a lo saasei is not losing anything. He doesn't feel that he's being mocked. And even if he wanted to keep it, right? Even if we were makpid to dress him in garments that were not klayim, he would get no reward for that. Ki misha mechuyev b'mitzvos amakayim mitzvos lo saasei, u misha eino mechuyev b'mitzvos, ki gon zeh she'ein tzorach lakayim mitzvos klayim, ve'eino makayim mitzvos lo saasei, shneim heim shavim. A person who's not commanded in a lo saasei, and a person who is dead and therefore exempt from mitzvos are in the same category. Ki amachuyav kasher kiye mitzvah v'lo avar lo asachet v'lo kana shlemus. Because a person who is obligated the mitzvos, when he keeps the mitzvah and doesn't violate, so he hasn't done the avera, he's done what's expected of him by not violating the lo asachet, but lo kana shlemus. As we've explained, keeping a lo asachet doesn't make you shalem. It protects you from doing an isser, it protects you from doing the wrong thing, but it doesn't enhance the quality of your religiosity, of your spirituality. And the same thing is true. Af ha-pater, kasher lo kiyem mitzvah, keivan shu pater, lo asacheid, v'lo kana shum shlemus. And similarly, a person who is totally exempt from it, again, the person who's obligated not to wear klayim and does so he avoids a prohibition, he avoids an avera, but it doesn't enhance his shlemus. The same thing is true for the dead person. The dead person has no obligation to do so, and therefore, when he violates it, he's not really in violation, and therefore also, lo kana shum shlemus. U'lefiha ach ein kan loeg l'rash. So again, so doing a positive mitzvah in the presence of someone who's not obligated could be seen as loeg l'rash, because if they could somehow opt in, there would be value in it. Right, but when it comes to a lo saasei, there's no such thing as opting in. Aval kasher lo kiyem mitzvah saasei, af agav shu patar, ein odoma petur lemishu chayi bedavar v'kiyem ha-mitzvah. Shezeh kana shlemus, v'zeh af shu patar lo kana shlemus klal. U'v'zeh shelo kana shlemus davar zeh havi loeg l'rosh. So if a person has a positive mitzvah opportunity that would enhance the quality of their life, and they do it, and they do it in the presence of someone who doesn't have that opportunity. But if they would have the opportunity, they would also have a greater shlemus in their life. So that's a mockery. That's saying, look what I have that you don't have. If you could have this, you would also benefit from it, right? So that would be insensitive. But when it comes to a lo saasei, again, there's nothing to be gained by opting into a lo saasei. So that's the distinction again. We've seen it twice now. The difference between shchita versus gilanasha, positive command versus negative command. And we see it wearing one sits out in the cemetery, which would be a positive mitzvah, mocking the dead, by flaunting a positive mitzvah versus burying the dead in tachrichei meis that are made out of klayim, which is a negative command. Ve'ein safek b'perish zeh, and again, this approach seems to be consistent. Now, says the Maharal, we've got one step left, and that is a very famous medrash, more well known to us as a Rashi. Yaakov Avinu meets up with his brother Esav, and of course we all know the famous words of Rashi, the famous rhyming Rashi, Im lavan garti, v'taryag mitzvos shamarti. So now we have a problem, because until now we've explained that Avram kept all 613, positive commandments and negative commandments, and Yaakov and Yitzchak only kept positive commandments. Comes along the famous Rashi, right, where Yaakov says to Esav, Im lavan garti, afalpichein taryag mitzvos shamarti. I kept all 613. So that seems to be an indication that Yaakov, in fact, kept all 613. So how do we explain that? Im kein, if so, we would have to explain, muchach sheYaakov shamar kol haTorah kmo Avram. Right? This is indicative that Yaakov kept the whole Torah, just like Avram Avinu. Hu lefi zeh tzorech lomar ki Yaakov haya muchan gam kein lechol haTorah kmo Avram. So the first thing we're going to say is, well, in a certain sense, we've already made the point that Yaakov is muchan, is fit, is prepared spiritually to receive the entire Torah like Avram. How did we explain that? And where did we stop short last time or two times ago? Right? We stopped short because we said the Torah is a Torah's chesed and the Torah is a Torah's emes. And we said Yaakov is emes, just like Avram is chesed. But the problem we said was that to be a person who's entirely chesed is possible. Avram could master the midah of chesed. Emes, who could ever master emes? Emes is the description of Hashem himself. So even though Yaakov is what titin emes li Yaakov, there's only so far you can get with emes. Now we're backtracking and saying, well, maybe on his level, Yaakov Avinu had mastered emes, and if he mastered emes, he could be mekabel the entire Torah's emes. So according to this medrash, we're gonna adopt that approach. Va'atam kamo shamarnu sha'Torah tikra Torah's chesed dichsiv v'Torah's chesed alashona. We've explained that the Torah is called Torah's chesed. So therefore, Avram, whose essence is chesed, was aligned with the Torah, and he accepted the entire Torah. And that's what the Gemara told us most explicitly, that Avram kept the entire Torah. The Torah's emes. But the Torah, we know, is also called a Torah's emes. Al shem sheishba ha-emes ha-bar, because the Torah has within it the ultimate clarified truth. The lakach zocha Yaakov shemidaso haemes ele Torah kedichsev titein emes liyakov chesed laAvram. Therefore, it's not unreasonable to say that Yaakov kept the entire Torah because Yaakov's midah was emes. Again, in the past we said we weren't comfortable saying that because emes, as much as Yaakov is the greatest human embodiment of emes, but he can't reach the ultimate level of God's emes. But now we're saying maybe it's enough. He's emistic enough to be makabel the whole Torah. Lakach hayukol echad. So therefore, says the Maharal, according to this approach, we would be suggesting that all of them, each of the avos, hein Avram, hein Yaakov, ru'uyim el kol haTorah. Avram mitzad ha-chesed va-tov shebetorah, v'Yaakov mitzad ha-emes shebetorah. Now, I just said all of the avos. We'll have to see what we do with Yitzchak in a moment. But part of the problem that we're left with now is that we already know about one of Yaakov's shortcomings, namely the fact that he married two sisters, right? So now you want to tell me, Taryag mitzvah shamarti, Yaakov says, I kept kol haTorah kula, but we know you didn't, right? We know at least one thing that you didn't keep. So now the Maharal has to deal with that. Well, the fi zeh, and therefore says the Maharal, Masha Amar Taryag mitzvah shamarti, or Taryag mitzvah kiamti, v'harei nasa beiz achayos, what about the fact that Yaakov Avinu married two sisters? Ratzolomar ki elu shtei achayos nasa al yedei ruach hakodesh. And now we get into a delicate point, which as Jews who learn Torah in a serious way and believe in Chazal and believe in our tzaddikim, we're willing to mekabel. I could see how a person could mock this, or obviously a person could misuse this, right? Shabtai Tzvi, lahavdel, 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 a million times over, also had his own version of making up his own, you know, hora asha to allow himself to do certain things and led people astray in that way. But we believe that Be'emes, Yaakov Avinu, was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to marry two sisters. It was an exception to the rule. Yaakov did not marry other sisters other than the ones that he was commanded to marry. So in a certain sense, he actually kept this mitzvah. Right? Yaakov did not marry two sisters. Right? There were many other sisters that he could have married in the world. The two that he married, Rachel and Leah, that was a command by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was, called it, you know, again, I told you in the past, the Nefesh HaChaim calls it an Avera Lishma, right? There was some divine truth that had to reveal itself through Yaakov marrying two sisters. It was an exception to the rule, and because of that, it was not a violation of Yaakov keeping 613 mitzvot. D'kamo shekimu kol haTorah al yedei Ruach HaKodesh, and I like the way the Maharal says this, just like, how did Yaakov know anything? How did Yaakov know any of the mitzvot that he kept? He knew them, obviously, through some type of Ruach HaKodesh. So too, the same Ruach HaKodesh that taught him what to keep and what to avoid, Kach husru lahem gam kein eiza mitzvah sayidei Ruach HaKodesh. So there were certain exceptions, certain heterim that were granted to them, namely, in this case, marrying two sisters, that also came through those same channels of Ruach HaKodesh. Ubezeshalo nasa Yaakov bezachayos zulas elu shtayim. And the fact that what? That Yaakov didn't marry any other sisters other than those two, in a certain sense, kiyem, he did keep isha lachosa lo tikach, a woman and her sister shall not be taken. What do you mean? In fact, he was married to two sisters. Yes, that was one set of two sisters, but there were sisters that he could have married and he didn't. So he kept the mitzvah with this exception that was granted to him al pi ruach hakodesh. Rak elu beiz achayos shahaya al yedei ruach hakodesh. With the exception of these two, ki ein safek ki zivug shel avos hayim and Hashem yizbarach. As we mentioned previously, he used this phrase, there's no doubt in our mind that the zivug, that the relationships that the avos were involved in, were mandated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu al yidei Ruach HaKodesh. Ulefi zeh, and according to this, so now we're left with one final step for tonight, and that is Yitzchak Avinu. What happens to Yitzchak? We've worked out, according to this approach, Yaakov. We've explained Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. We've explained how Yaakov is MS and the Torah is a Torah's MS. Avram already we worked out last time. We had no problem getting Avram to 613. What about Yitzchak? Do we leave Yitzchak in the camp of he kept Mitzvah Saseh, but he didn't keep Lo Saseh? Or should we say it's a package deal? Once you have Avram and you have Yaakov, so you have Yitzchak sandwiched in the middle. Right? Is that a reasonable thing to say? Says the Maharal, I think it is. Ulefize. Roy Lomar Kigam Yitzchak Avinu, Shaya Echad Mina Avos, Shahaya Lehem Hamayla Eliona. If Yitzchak is part of that unique group that is called Avos, as the Gemara in Brachos tells us, Gemara in Brachos Tez Zayin says, Ein Korin Avos Ela Shlosha. There are only three who are called Avos. So if Avram, we worked out, kept Kol HaTorah Kula. And Yaakov, we've now suggested, kept Kol HaTorah Kula. So if only three people in history are worthy of the title Avos, it has to be, or at least it's fair to suggest, that Yitzchak also kept Kol HaTorah Kula, right? That he, so to speak, sandwiched in between. If the starting point is such, and the end is such, then the middle is likely also such. That's the Maharal's logic that he develops actually elsewhere in some of his other Sfarim, and is pointed out here in the footnotes of the edition that I'm using. So therefore, since Yitzchak is one of the Avos, Shehayu Lehem HaMayla El Yona, he's in that unique category of being called Avos, Hayukrovim al Maila Satorah, where the Avos themselves were generally speaking close to this Madrega called Torah, Lakach Gam Kein Hayim Akayim Kol HaTorah. So therefore, if we're going to go with this approach, it's fair to suggest Yitzchak also kept the entire Torah. Raksha al Kol Panim Yesh Chiluk VeHefresh Beneim. But says the Maharal, even though now I'm opening up this possibility, right? Again, last time we were only good with Avram keeping Kol HaTorah Kula. But now we're saying maybe one could make the case for Yitzchak and Yaakov as well, but even so, even if they all kept 613, the level of observance was still different. Ki Avram shaya muchan legamri el Torah, Avram, who was the most in sync with Torah, kept the Torah in such a way, ki ilu haya metzuva. Avram, it was as if he was mamish commanded. There's no difference between Avram Avinu and each of us right now, after Har Sinai. Ulefichach ksiv etzlo, and therefore it says about Avram, Eikav asher shama Avram bekoli v'yishmor mishmarti chukosai v'sarasai. Avram mamish heard the Dvar Hashem and kept the mitzvot as such. Yaakov, What about Yaakov? Aval Yaakov lo hayakol kach mesugal al Torah. Yaakov was not as mesugal to Torah. She had nechshav ki ilu hayim etzuva min Hashem Yisbarach. We wouldn't say about Yaakov, again, his midas emes, which is, again, synonymous with Torah's emes, but it's hard to match yourself up fully with emes. So therefore, we would say Yaakov is a little bit of a lower level, more like a person who's not commanded per se, or not fully commanded. V'Yitzchak, and Yitzchak, who's not in the category of Torah's chesed, and not in the category of Torah's emes, but is sandwiched into this package of the avos, those individuals who are on this Maila El Yona, and therefore presumably connected to Torah, v'Yitzchak lo hayemuchan gam ken ele Torah shiyek mo Yaakov. Yitzchak was not even on the Madrega of Yaakov, not even in the Torah's Emes camp, kamo shamarnu, u'mikol makom hayemakayimim haTorah me'atzvam. And yet, Yaakov and Yitzchak still kept the Torah on their own, again, not as mitzuvah va'osa, some slight distinction even between Yitzchak and Yaakov. So we're putting Avram at the top, then Yaakov, then Yitzchak, in terms of the weightiness of their observance. But we're saying that they all kept all 613. Now we have a nice mahalach in this topic. And again, I don't have any doubts about the truth of the way that we're presenting it. And again, if you want to learn more about it, you can read my super commentary on Parshas Vayigash, where I speak at length about the avos and their mitzvah observance. Okay, Ad Kan Perek Chaf, completed the Perek. And next time we'll come back into the world of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what is it? What was it about Moshe as the greatest prophet of all that made him the shliach to transmit the Torah to each and every one of us? Okay, so we'll stop here for tonight. Yashar Koyach, thanks for being here. Any questions?